Welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me back in the studios of CBS Interactive for the first time in 2011 is our co-host, Fleischmann Hillard's VP of Digital Media, Scott Rohde.
Hi, Tim.
This week, the paid content debate, part 807, now the media regulator's got a view. Seven is cleared over its controversial outing of the New South Wales Transport Minister. The PR stunt that saw an Australian town renamed. No, Harvey Norman, no. Expedia hands its Facebook page to consumers. Genius marketing or lazy SEO? And how the media coped with the Brisbane floods. So there's a lot to catch up since we last sat down in this studio, which feels like it was mere days ago. That was probably
a month ago.
Yes. Now, Scott, before we talk about the week's topics, one thing I was entertained by, enjoying being able to sit back and be a consumer of media rather than a maker of media over the holidays. I of course checked out Punch most days and found a posting by you, which was kind of sort of you sort of sharing your annoyance when your car and other cars in the street got keyed. But
yeah.
What I'm curious about is it was quite a divided comment stream.
Yeah, it was interesting.
What's it like being the other side of it when suddenly people are talking about you?
It's kind of weird at times. I mean, one of the things is the headline was changed. So it was actually, my original headline was an open letter to the people who keyed the cars in my street, because there was 20 cars keyed in the street in total on New Year's Day. Somebody went along, keyed every single car, every panel, including a disabled person's car, you know, and they've got their spot marked out. So that was my open letter to them all. But a lot of people seem to think that it was just about me. And I tried to reply as much as possible, and I was like, it's not just about me. I'm not that egotistical, you know.
So is there a point where you regretted writing the piece?
No, never. No, I would never do that. I think if you're going to put your name to something, you stand by it. I'll probably write some more if they don't mind the Punch.
And it did raise the question of why you drive a yellow Polo.
Because it's the World Car of the Year at the moment, and I got that as an ex demo for a really great price.
Yellow.
It's bright yellow. It's awesome. It means I can never lose it in a car park.
Do you not look slightly like Noddy, though?
Yeah, of course a little like Noddy. I'm short with a big nose.
But to more serious matters. First today, a report from the Australian Communications and Media Authority, ACMA, offers a few insights into how the regulator sees the Australian media landscape. The report's called Changing Business Models in the Australian Communications and Media Sectors, Challenge and Response Strategies. Now, there's a lot in the report, but one of the interesting points is how it sees the future of paid online content. Just a paragraph or two of quotes from it. The future success of any user pays strategy for online news content is heavily dependent on consumers' willingness to pay for online news formerly accessed for free and mass adoption of those services. However, on the basis of available evidence relating to Australia, the majority of adult internet unit users have not demonstrated a willingness to date to pay to access news online. Now, it goes on to make the point that while this might change if free online news content is restricted, then the likelihood of such a development occurring needs to be considered in the context of major global news players, such as the BBC's news service, and domestic, national and regional news providers, such as the ABC. So, Scott, not necessarily a new view,
no.
But interesting that firstly, that it comes from ACMA, which obviously is the sort of government's media watchdog.
Mm.
If you were a publisher facing this problem, what would you do?
Well, I think what news is doing is probably what I do. I mean, they're looking for new avenues. I think this year with the rise of the tablet, I suppose, with the iPad last year, they've sold 15 million worldwide. You know, every company is now jumping on the tablet bandwagon. And I think that the chances are that people are going to consume media in different ways in the future. Whilst there's a free model out there, I think a lot of people will still always... If there's a free model and a paid-for model, and the free model is based on one of the best news services in the world, people are going to go there. What you might see in the future is the likes of the BBC expanding even more so into every country so that it becomes a global organisation. I know it kind of is at the moment, but...
Well, like, you know, certainly if you look at the sort of destination sites within Australia,
yeah.
You know, the BBC is within the top 10.
Oh, absolutely,
and has ads on in Australia, so
yes.
It monetises for them.
It does, but it doesn't it doesn't have a subscription model.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to see. But I think when people start paying subscription models for the iPad, for that kind of thing.
Now, you've had your iPad for what, 6 months yet?
Oh, no, I've had it since about 12, 10.
When did it launch? Was it April?
About 9 months ago, yes. Yeah. I've had it about nine
so
months
you've
now.
You've had it long enough to get used to it and live with it. How have your habits changed in terms of what you pay for?
I just pretty much, I buy apps still. I've probably spent, if I look at my app spend, including buying magazines online, that kind of stuff, I've probably spent about $400 in that 9 months.
So on any given day, you like to buy an app, or is it less often?
I'll check. I always check the daily apps and see if there's any bargains on. You know, if there's an app at $1.19, spending a dollar on an app isn't a big deal. You know, it's a drop in the ocean. You know, there's one app I use called Screens, which lets me control my Mac and my I've got a Mac in my bedroom. And it lets me control the Mac from my iPad, so I can actually just sit in the lounge, and if I need to download something, I just quickly control my Mac from upstairs.
And how about the news apps? We're seeing a couple of sort of models emerge. You know, we've got News Limited and Murdoch launching The Daily,
yep.
which you know, is a relatively low price point, but you know, sort of you've got to keep resubscribing.
Yep.
You've then got yesterday we had ACP launching Magshot, which I think is. Memory, I think 16 of their titles.
Yeah.
But only buying single digital replica editions.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is still in Australia is people's access to wireless networks. I think that's one of the things. And then obviously, if you're at home, you know, if you're downloading that much data, because it's basically a newspaper worth of data, it's quite a lot of information. So I think we're going to have to wait till, you know, internet penetration in Australia is. I think 14 million people are accessing the web, but how many of them get fast connections, you know, plus the 3G networks, are they prepared for the amount of people who start downloading newspapers every day? It's, you know, there's a lot of questions to be asked.
Well, next, a let off for Seven. We stay with media regulator ACMA. It's ruled that Seven did not breach the TV code of practice when it outed former Transport Minister David Campbell last year. The network filmed him leaving a gay sauna in Sydney and he resigned as the show was put to air. But ACMA has ruled that there was an identifiable public interest. So the official ruling hasn't actually been released yet, but it was leaked to the Sunday Press, as the various parties, including the network, would have had copies of it. This is a tricky one, Scott, because you've got the journalistic ethics of private life versus public interest.
I'm very much in two minds on this one. The first aspect is he's a politician, you know, but that doesn't mean that he shouldn't have a private life. You know, if he so chooses to do what he so chooses, that's his choice. But on the flip side of that, what if an organisation or something found out about it and blackmailed him into getting him to do something in government to put a case forward or support something? You know, it's those moments where you realise that if you're a politician, then there's no chance of, look, no human's whiter than white, but you have to hold yourself up to a higher standard because you have the possibility of making decisions that influence millions of people's lives.
So if you had been the regulator and had to come down on whether it stayed within the bounds of acceptability...
I actually think I kind of agree with what they did. I think it's wrong of why they targeted him, you know, I think in all those aspects, but the fact that he... My concern was solely about if he had been blackmailed by another organisation or something and it influenced millions of people's lives. That's where you have to say, well, is it in the public interest? I actually think it is, even though it shouldn't be.
Well, next, we talk about Harvey Norman's ongoing online retail disaster. So this is one that blew up while we were all on our
sunning
holidays.
Sunning it up.
Yes.
Well, I was sunning it. You were sunning it up and I was at work.
It's such a good topic, though. It's still kind of live. So I'm sure most people will be aware of it. This open letter from the retailers, of which Jerry Harvey from Harvey Norman was one of the very kind of public faces on it, which ostensibly seemed to be saying to the government and saying to the public, please support us by paying more tax so that people overseas can't compete with us quite so hard when it comes to online retail.
Yeah.
There was something of a backlash.
Yeah, I mean, first off, if you're going to do a campaign to try and get, you know, people online involved, to basically say, you know, we're struggling here, shop with us, why would you take a traditional advert for a start? I mean, that's pretty much a dumb move straight off the bat. The second thing that was a real problem was his statements, you know, in the press was, you know, basically, oh, we're not doing so well, we need money. And I think on internet shopping from abroad accounts to some like 7% or something. You know, it's not a massive figure. But these guys are creaming it at the moment with the difference in the dollar and all that kind of stuff. And I think that it's now was not the time to do this campaign. It was interesting because I had a look at the PR agency behind it. I can't remember their name right now. It's
FD.
FD, I think it is, yeah. And I looked, and they don't seem to have any form of social component on their website. They don't seem to do anything digital, really, which is a massive mistake if you're going to do a campaign targeting online.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether some of it was the message itself was a bit lost. You know, because if the message was, hey, it's a bit unfair that, you know, when we do online sales, we have to pay a tax,
yeah,
or our customers have to pay a tax, but when somebody else does, they don't.
Yeah.
Then, regardless of the actual outcome they wanted, surely their message would have been better to say, "So we would like the tax reduced for us as well."
Yeah, I agree with that.
Rather than please tax the other people, yeah, which is how people saw it.
I mean, one of the other things is a lot of people don't. It's funny. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and it's an interesting one because a lot of people do not see the difference between America and Australia. In America, a product is made for an audience of 300 million, you know, and it gets created at a much lower rate.
Yeah, the benefits of scale.
Yeah, whereas in Australia, things have to be changed to suit Australian laws and all that kind of stuff. So to scale, it's why it costs more here, you know. That doesn't mean that people don't access the web to get stuff cheap, but that's the reason why it does cost more. But I don't think MD ever said that in any of the interviews I saw. Nobody actually sat and said, well, we're working to a smaller marketplace.
I wonder also if there's just a slight arrogance with some of the, let's call it big end of town, yeah, for a better expression. Because what we saw was when the mining tax came along, they took out a very effective advertising campaign on, yeah, how it was going to hurt the economy and hurt Australia. And the government backed down and arguably contributed to Kevin Rudd's downfall. And I think you saw people like rub their hands together and think, right, we can get what we want. All we have to, yeah, do is take out an advertising campaign, scare the government.
Yeah.
And we saw it with the sort of coalition of apparently small news agents and stuff over the new regulations over the display of cigarettes,
yeah,
which turned out to be funded by the cigarette industry. And again, it was one of those ones where you thought that they almost thought, just because we're advertising saying what we want, we'll get our way.
Yeah.
And it's almost that again.
It was a bad idea. And funnily enough, it was followed up by Bing Lee during the flood crisis doing this whole, you know, if you like us on Facebook, we'll donate. So basically said, if you like us on Facebook, we'll donate $10,000, up to a maximum of $10,000 if we get 10,000 fans. And, you know, everybody else was just saying, here's money.
Yes, but not doing it strings.
Yeah, but yeah, they use it as a marketing strategy to gain followers. And I think in the US, I was looking at a study the other day, it said that followers are worth something like $3.42. So, you know, they made, theoretically, they'll make $35,000 out of business out of the 10,000 fans they've got, which is just, you know, it's just greedy and wrong. And it really stood, whoever was doing their social media wrapped around that was really dumb.
Well, we'll talk about the floods a little bit later on. Next, we do carry on talking about Facebook, though, with a road safety stunt with a difference. Victoria's Transport Accident Commission has launched a PR and Facebook stunt, which has seen the Victorian town of Speed renamed Speed Kills after it got 10,000 likes on Facebook. The idea came to TAC's marketing boss, John Thompson, after he drove through the town on the way to a focus group in Mildura, if I remember rightly. Now, Scott, with your PR hat on, they've just this week hit their 10,000. It happened very quickly. It's all over the Victorian papers and online as we're recording this.
Yep.
Good stunt?
Yeah, good stunt. I mean, it's, you know, simple idea, and just changed it. It's creating it something really, really interesting. People like it because everybody knows it's Speed Kills. I'd love to see, like, that town covered in snow just to take a picture of Speed Kills with that kind of white image around it. But I think that it's a good idea. Look, sometimes the best ideas are the simplest ideas, and that's just a smart idea. And, you know, the video is nice for the locals saying that we're a small town. People don't really seem to think that they say the name Speed, they just hammer through it. And I've seen small towns like that, and, you know, I always slow down, but I've seen people just fly through them at 110, 120, and you just think, well, you know, kid could run across the road, speed kills.
This is the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. For more on all the stories we've been talking about, head to mumbrella.com.au. Next, the travel brand that's putting its Facebook page in the hands of its customers, or three of them anyway. So travel site Expedia will hand its Australian Facebook page to three consumers for a month who will compete to create the most compelling content for the $10,000 prize. Now, part of me thinks that this is quite a nice idea, and part of me wonders if it's just incredibly lazy by the marketers. And the Mumbrella comment stream has been similarly split. Now, Scott, we seem to be talking a lot about our Facebook pages today. Which side do you come on? Clever stunt or a bit lazy?
Well, I know the team behind it, so, you know, I don't want to...
Who does it? Is it Amnesia?
I think it's Amnesia, yeah. As far as I know, I know it's the... Carly Evans.
Yeah, I know when I wrote about it. It was the staff themselves at Expedia who reached out to me. So yeah. I'm not sure if Amnesia, although they do stuff
implementing
them,
it, maybe
necessarily, how involved
or not implementing it as a case,
yes,
maybe.
But anyway, yeah. Do you like the campaign?
Look, I think it's okay. It's getting PR, which is obviously the key part to it. You know, the key part to any stunt is for people to find out about Expedia, and we're talking about Expedia, and not in a negative sense. We're talking about it, this is something they're doing that's getting people involved. Obviously, it has its dangers. I figure although they're saying that it's hands off, they'll probably still be hands on a little bit, just to ensure that nothing goes wrong. Or if they don't have that, I'd say right now get a crisis communications plan in place right away. But $10,000, you know, you could have ramped up that a little bit more. If you're going to get three people doing, say they're doing 60, 70 hours of work to try and win this $10,000.
Yeah, so it'd be the equivalent of a one-person salary of $40,000 a year, wouldn't
yeah.
it? Which doesn't seem that generous.
No, not much at all.
And that's always the danger with these things, isn't it? I've noticed that a couple of times when there have been prizes for doing something like become our, you know, social
bloggers,
media blogger.
Or star blogger.
You know, I remember Jetstar got hammered for it as well. Mm. You know, and the idea is you know, the prizes come and, you know, that one was, I think, follow Powderfinger on tour yeah. or whatever. And they were, and people were saying, well, you know, if you brought in a communications professional to do that, they'd be paid more. Is that the point, or do you make yourself vulnerable to that accusation?
You're going to do that, you're going to make yourself open. But look, there's a lot of talented people out there that have skills that can be your guest blogger, can be your star, you know, news writer, whatever. But you just have to be careful in these situations that you don't look as though you're just trying to get free stuff.
Well, next, how the media handled the floods. It was a big, important story that brought out the best of Australia's media, the Brisbane flood emergency. Scott, how do you think the media played it?
I thought they handled it well. You know, the ABC, I found ABC's 24-hour news slightly repetitive and that whole back to them, back to us. But I found Channel 9 and 7 actually were doing pretty much identical.
It was interesting. Well, let's take a few of the channels individually. Maybe start with social media. I mean, for me, the moment I first realised this is quite a big deal was the Toowoomba floods, with that footage shot from the guy in the office shooting the car, the video of the cars floating away in the car park. And it was amazing seeing how that kind of just went everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it, I think, at... somebody linked it to me, and I think I looked at it, and it was like 1,200 views. And then, you know, I looked at it the next day, and it was sitting at like 300,000 or something. It was just, you know, exponential with the amount of people just watching it. But then I noticed, and something really disappointed me was, I went on to Sydney Morning Herald, and they had, flood coverage, here's our flood coverage. You went onto their video site, and there was that YouTube video. And it had, you know...
And it was a straight lift, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a straight lift. It looks like it's been ripped and embedded into their...
Yes, it still has the YouTube logo on it.
Yeah, so it's embedded into their proprietary system.
With an ad playing in front of it.
That was my issue. They had an ad playing, so you couldn't watch the video. So they're making... Unless they've said, and I've not read it anywhere, they're donating the profits of that advert or those ad views to the flood. They're profiting...
And it wasn't only Fairfax News. Unless the news.com. Fairfax did it first, I think.
Yeah.
I saw the news.com.au had the same video up as well. I did actually.
I don't think news.com had an ad. Well, I don't remember an ad.
Yeah,
no,
you're right. But I don't know whether they did it with permission. And of course, while someone's spending time on their site, there are still ads around it, even if it's not pre-roll. I did email the, or via YouTube, attempted to contact the person who posted it, but was unsuccessful in finding out whether he granted permission. Because, of course, he might have granted permission. But, yeah, you
probably don't grant it with an advert in front of it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that the video playing on YouTube was running with ads linking to the flood relief campaign. So, arguably on YouTube, he's doing the right thing. And the question
So, you know, somebody smart at SMH would have created just a small black screen with the words donate to this campaign. You know, that's the way to do it. That's to get people involved.
Well, the other issue, obviously, is one around copyright that we've talked around before with the lifting of videos from YouTube.
But you're discovering this more and more that, you know, the media organisations, I remember Facebook's the big one. When somebody dies or something, they're straight all over their Facebook to try and find out what images. And those images do not, you know, they're not in the private domain because they're hosted in a, they're not in the public domain because they're hosted on a private site.
Well, and one of the arguments as well is with videos is there is a fair usage defence, which is why sometimes you'll hear something that's been lifted from YouTube, it will have a bit of a rubbish little voiceover at the start and at the end, which is to me that's the way of getting around because you're saying it's part of a package. You know, it's a clip. In the same way that if you, I don't know, you know, if you review a novel, you're allowed to quote a few paragraphs from it,
or if you review a movie, you're allowed to show.
And the term is fair use.
But you find that people who grab YouTube links tend to just play the whole thing.
How about sort of social media more widely during the floods?
I think it was impressive to see people. You know, if somebody went missing, or there was people looking for someone that everybody was retweeting it. I thought that was interesting. It was good to see people talking about it on the Facebook and asking their friends who were in other countries to donate raise awareness.
Yeah, and it did. It had an organising factor, didn't it? You know, when people were doing fundraisers or that sort of thing. You know, it was sort of quite.
And I think that's been the most impressive thing is how it became not just about Australia rallying around, but the rest of the world all started. I mean, even Oprah, you know, has asked people to donate to the floods and stuff.
Well, let's talk about some of the different media. Firstly, TV. Your highlights of how TV covered the floods.
You know, I think it's one of those things that they did the job adequately. You know, I don't think there was too many. I always find it weird when I'm watching the flood stuff and, you know, there's somebody, they're interviewing somebody and they're saying, yeah, well, we're not sure if it's going to come to our house and the water's like 3 feet away from their house. And I'm thinking, why are you talking to the journalist? Shouldn't you be in the house packing up and getting the hell out of there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to come to the defence. I thought they rose to the occasion quite well, actually. All of them.
I liked the fact that it seemed to be the faces I'd never seen before that doing a lot of the reporting.
Well, I think a lot of what happened, of course, was, you know, where the live coverage naturally starts each day is with the morning shows. Yeah. And, of course, out of the rating season, the A-list presenters tend to go away. Yeah. So you'll see some unfamiliar faces. But, for instance, you know, when the first day it became really serious in Brisbane, for instance, I remember seeing on 7 presenting Sunrise was Larry Emder, who usually does the morning show, but was sitting in on Sunrise and sort of carrying through. And, you know, and he's a veteran of live TV, but he originally was a game show host.
Yeah.
Yet he kind of grew as it kind of went on, and he handled it, you know, he handled it with the gravity it needed. And similarly, you were seeing, like, you know, Grant Denyer, who does their weather. It was interesting. I wasn't sure about the tone for the first couple of days, but again, as it went on, you know, each day you got the sense that he was kind of becoming a bit more journalistic about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they handled it. Well, look, although I said adequately, I'll take it, but I'll actually retract that. I think that given the situations that have happened in Australia, the amount of, you know, things like this, I think they handled it really well because they're probably not used to it. Hmm. You know,
and the decision to go to that rolling coverage as well so early on. You know, and there's a lot of resources to throw at it with, you know, moving crews, bringing in, you know, what was going to be a skeleton staff, and you have to bring in the full crew. Obviously, just helicopters, all of that sort of thing. Yeah. You know?
Oh no, look, you know, I think that people I've spoken to said that they were getting what they wanted from it, and I think that's the key.
Yeah, nine did well. Less familiar faces. Lisa Wilkinson didn't come back, for instance, to today because she was I read somewhere she was on a boat in the
Antarctic.
I always get my Arctic and my Antarctic mixed up.
Bottom, Arctic top,
and uncontactable. So yeah. I noticed that as well.
Which means you can kind of forgive her for not jumping. I'm coming back.
But Stefanovic, Karl Stefanovic was there, and he appeared to be on air. It felt like 24 hours a day. I mean, him, you know. Yeah.
Don't know how he kept going.
Yeah, but, you know, and he again kept it going very well. And then 10, of course, hasn't quite launched 6 p.m. with George Negus.
Yeah.
Shortly after this, a couple of days after this podcast goes out, actually. But, of course, it was an opportunity to put him in front of the camera and, you know, help familiarise the audience with him. So, you know, they kind of all were winners. I was lucky, actually. I felt quite sort of almost privileged to do it. I went in. In fact, I had one of those sort of phone calls that come up. Every now and then I pop up on things like The Morning Show or Sunrise to talk about social media or something.
Because you're so awesome.
So I so available. Sometimes.
It's available.
But, you know, so I had a sort of call from somebody on the 7 News crew to say, can you come in to record what I thought was going to be a sort of soundbite said for the 6 o'clock news, you know, just as part of a package on social media. So I kind of said, yeah, sure, coming at 1 o'clock. And literally within about 3 minutes of walking through the door, I was sitting at the desk live on the 1 o'clock news, which was a surprise, because they'd obviously taken the decision at some point that was what was going to happen, but hadn't remembered to tell me. So literally, I kind of walked in and I was thinking, this is you know, slightly more attention than I usually get.
They're making you up.
Well, they were. Well, you know, and you're having the makeup thrown up on you as you go. But what was really interesting was just waiting to go through was sitting in the back of the control room and just watching, you know, the intense concentration as you've just got 6 or 7 people just in that one control room, you know, on every different monitor, someone else waiting to come in. You've got live things falling down or not.
Highly strategic, that role. I mean, that whole bouncing, you know, you're multitasking to such a level because you've got to control every aspect. It's really impressive, actually.
It was. No, I really felt, and the thing was, it wasn't like a normal news bulletin either, because it was rolling.
Yeah.
You know, and this was their big lunchtime news, but there was, you know, there was no script. So it was Chris Barth, who was the newsreader, and again, we probably chatted for 6 or 7 minutes, and she did it completely without sort of questions provided, just being journalistic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think all of the networks did a really good job, actually.
Well, if you go to the newspapers, I think news.com did a much better job than SMH did.
Yeah, sort of the News Limited.
The Fairfax versus, I felt their coverage was a lot more in depth. I liked the whole rolling. They had an updated minute by minute thing, and anything that was released, they kept up to date. And I was really impressed by that. I even dropped Paul Coggan a message to tell him that I was
so
impressed.
He's on the online side of
He runs. He's editor of news.com, isn't he?
Yeah, the newspapers. I thought they were all pretty powerful, actually.
I think Australia rose to the occasion in this case.
I wasn't on the first of the big days. I wasn't totally in love with the design of the Herald on the first day.
It felt like it took 2 or 3 days for them to get to that area where they were content with.
Also, that I think it took a while for
people to realise.
To realise, actually, this is going to be a really big deal.
And Victoria at the moment, you know, they're getting hit quite hard with it as well.
And that's the thing, you know, Victoria's almost been downplayed because of the extent of what happened in Queensland. But otherwise, Victoria would have been the biggest story of the year.
Yeah. It was like the size of the water and Queensland was like three times the size of Great Britain.
Yeah, a massive aspect. The other aspect, which I don't think has fully come through yet, which is a sort of follow-on for media, is I was talking to someone involved in the auditing of newspapers, you know, newspaper circulations and stuff. So if they've got that knock-on effect of, on the one hand, a massive story that people want to read, to buy, but also massive problems of distribution in those areas. So we'll see the numbers go everywhere for the next audits. But he was also making the point that, you know, there's not much money in news agencies these days. As he said, as many as 500 news agents have closed because of the floods.
Wow.
His sense is a lot of them will never reopen.
See, what I'm intrigued by is how many people were using their mobile phones on 3G to get news.
Yeah.
I'd love to get a statistic on that to see how many people were reading the newspapers.
And of course, sometimes mobile was falling over, course.
So
But the question is, having tried it, will they, you know, and if their local news agent doesn't open, will they ever go to the next furthest away news agent? Or will we just suddenly see in some areas
Go the other way, where it might mean people start subscribing to news sites.
There's a lot to to ruminate on the flood stuff. And I suspect that when it comes to things like the Walkley Awards, we'll see a lot of that. Well, finally, we'll be talking about Yahoo 7's big announcement. Now, just before recording this podcast, I was at a Yahoo 7 press conference, which was called at pretty short notice. The company wanted to announce that it paid $40 million for group buying site Spreets. Here's what they had to say. How much is the acquisition for?
It's priced around $40 million is around the price, but the reason for the investment was the amount of money that they're going to invest in the business going forward. And those resources, that amount, will give us an unbeatable lead in the market, and that's kind of why we went for it.
What makes this an attractive acquisition for Yahoo 7?
Yeah, well, the space is exploding. We're seeing social, mobility, e-commerce just, you know, completely changing the way we're all using the web at the moment. What we've learned is leadership's important. The big get bigger. You know, these businesses, the key to success is about having that massive reach to be able to go out and find people who are interested in offers and find amazing deals to send to them. So it's a perfect complement to our business.
So Scott, do you ever use these group bargain sites?
I used one last Friday.
What did you get?
I got $32 for half an hour go-karting.
So,
which is usually quite expensive, but you know, I think we got 14 of us. We all chipped in like in the space of an hour. Somebody just threw it in a credit card. Boom, done. It's usually 90. We all save $60.
So maybe explain how these sites work for people who don't.
Well, a lot of them is you know, there's a few different models, I suppose. There's the model where you speak to someone and they offer a discount to anybody that signs on. Like you can get, say, you want a massage pampering session at say the Orient Hotel. They'll say it's usually $300, but we'll do it for $180 if you sign up. And if you know 100 people sign up, it'll be even cheaper. You know, there's sites like that as well. That the more people, it's like Dutch auctions type thing. The more people sign up, the cheaper it goes. But then there's a cut off point, or there's the point where you know that. So it's quite interesting. I think one of the key aspects of why Yahoo 7 have done this is because Groupon still hasn't launched in Australia. So they've seen a massive potential to jump into this space before the world leader leads into this space.
Yes, because there's the clone, isn't there, Scoopon? Yeah. And we've also, I mean, I guess the other big recent one push was for sort of 9MSM, which is Kudo, I think.
Yeah.
And there are various other ones.
It'll be interesting to see if Yahoo 7 tie in with some of their advertisers to then try and push out, you know, better programs. Because if you can link in your advertisers with Spreets, then you've got a massive potential for both them.
It was interesting, being at the press conference, Rowan Lund, the boss of Yahoo 7, you know, I think the point he was making is, yeah, it is a chance to, for them, it's a chance to get away just from display advertising as well, you know, display and classified advertising to sort of other revenue models. I don't think we'll ever see it rebranded as something Yahoo-ish or 7-ish.
No, unless, it may even end up branded as Groupon if they decide to buy it out over here.
Well, I suppose the thing is, now that it's sold to Yahoo 7, that's probably off the table now.
Never know. If they get offered a deal of, you know, buy it off them for $150 million, would they do that? Would the shareholders want an extra $110 million over a year profit?
Yes. I guess the thing is, though, with Groupon being unwilling to even pay that much for Scoopon just to get the assets, we don't know.
I think they were more pissed off that they domain squatted. Theoretically, they didn't domain squat, but it's a bit rude of them to choose a company that do exactly the same thing in another country who are going global and take their name and take their website, you know?
Yes. Rude is definitely
rude,
the word, I think. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you to my co-host, Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. For these stories and more, head to mumbrella.com.au. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.